Yeah.
What does your shirt say there, Robert?
Marvelously mundane motor vehicles.
What is that?
There's a festival in the UK held by an insurance company. It's the Festival of the Unexceptional.
Oh.
You bring cars that are just boring.
But it makes them exceptional by doing that.
You're not wrong.
It's like super hot summer days over here right now. Like dangerously, the world is on fire hot. So the other day I washed my car inside and out, and like I got a toothbrush out and I like did all
detail.
The detailing. Mm-hmm. I shined it up wonderfully. I got in it. I rolled all the windows down. I opened the sunroof or the moonroof, whatever it's called. And I put on some music and I started driving, and I realized within 10 minutes I was the only person driving with my windows down. Do you still drive with your windows
Never.
Down?
Never.
Absolutely not. No.
Never, ever.
I've been looking around because it's super hot here too. I've been looking around at the people driving around with their windows down, and I think your air conditioner must be broken or you're smoking in your car. Those are the only two options.
Yeah, you're right. Smoking, that was right. That was a good reason to have the windows down. But no, I mean, even when it's hot, opening the windows doesn't cool it down at all. It's just like, no. Well, I guess you can get some fresh air. But ever since cars have been pretty much climate controlled, even if it's nice weather out, I never roll the windows down. I just always have air.
You don't like the feeling of the wind blowing through your hair?
Well,
and the...
No. Because I've got to I have to open two windows first. Because if you just have one, it does that bump, 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 bump pressure thing.
Okay,
and
yes,
it hurts
that's
my ears.
Weird.
And then it's just loud. I don't like that noise.
I think convertibles are horribly uncomfortable above 30 miles an hour. I don't understand why anyone likes them.
Yeah.
The wind buffeting is awful. And the expensive convertibles, they go to great lengths to minimize the wind buffeting. But at that point, just put air conditioning in a closed car.
Yeah. I think that you have got to look like the biggest dork if you have a convertible and you have the top down, but you have the windows up.
Yeah.
That's just the dumbest look.
And Mercedes puts a thing, probably other car companies do this too, but Mercedes puts a heater vent behind your neck in the headrest for when the top's down. They call it the air scarf.
Wow.
And I just wonder why you have the top down at all at that point.
So, Chad, I take it you're one of these guys who just loves the wind in your hair and the freedom of the open road.
I never thought I would be in the minority. And now you can actually attach polls to podcasts. So I'll do that for this episode. That'll be the poll question. Do you drive with the windows down? And it'll obviously inevitably prove that I am 100% in the minority. I drove for about 25 minutes is the rounding out of the story. And I literally saw one other person and they were driving a car that did not have air conditioning. So it made me feel I don't know. I didn't know if it was because people were freaked out because of the air quality or whatnot, but I guess it's just you don't like the road noise and the wind in your hair.
Another time I see people with their windows down, probably the only other time, is when they have a really loud stereo they want everybody to hear.
Oh, yeah.
They got to have the windows down. So ka-boom, ka-boom, ka-boom,
that is literally ka-boom. What everyone sounds like, too. That was well done, Steve.
They do. You just hear the bass.
Last year during the heat of the summer, I drove with my windows down for a solid month. But it was because I left my car parked outside. And unbeknownst to me, I had pressed the keys the buttons on the key in my pocket in such a way that it rolled all of the windows down in a rainstorm. And it was sitting like that for about 2 hours. So I drove around with my windows down just to air it out. But that was an exception.
Do you ever leave your, this might be a city thing, leave your car intentionally unlocked so that if somebody wants to try to steal something, they can just open it up and see there's nothing in there. They won't break your windows. Because that, I think that the, at least on sort of newer cars, the ability to steal the car itself is pretty difficult. I think you can't just get under the dash like in the movies and hotwire them as easily as you want to could. I could be wrong about that, but I think the biggest threat is somebody stealing stuff from inside of your car.
I leave all of my older cars unlocked because they have manual keys and that's just a pain. I'm not going to mess with that. And who's going to break into a Reliant Robin anyway? But in my Polestar, I lock it all the time. Because it doesn't have a start-stop button. So if I'm vaguely near it and someone were to get inside and sit down, they could drive away in my car.
My wife had her car stolen twice within the past 365 days. One time out of an airport parking lot when we were all off celebrating her 40th birthday, and it was stolen. And then there was an attempted stealing in the driveway of our house, which was crazy. Don't leave a car in the driveway anymore, which is very horrifying.
You got to move out of that neighborhood, and it's just gone
to
pot.
It's a horrible area. And so it was an attempted break-in, and apparently the way they do it for Lexuses and a few other cars is just behind the driver headlight, I believe it is. There's a connection to the computer. They basically connect their car to the computer, and then they can kind of override everything, start it, and then that's why Lexuses are, or I think just because like the high-end SUVs are just kind of so desirable, and because it is such an easy way, the Lexus RX series are like stolen.
That seems like
here
a really
in Toronto, like
flaw in that car.
50 a day or something like that. It's a ridiculous. It's like it's a huge issue because it does seem like a ridiculous flaw. We took it to the dealership, and even the dealership was like, "Yeah, it's very easy." We knew because the signal wasn't working. Like, we just woke up, started driving, and the signal wasn't working, and an Amazon package was missing from inside because they managed to get in, but she has a new thing which you have to put a code in before you can actually shift the car into gear, I think it is. So they tried to do it, and they couldn't shift it into gear, so they ended up just stealing the Amazon package and running off.
See, that's the kind of thing I think about when we're going to get into controversial topics here. When a certain sect of Americans talk about protecting yourself with guns, how is a gun going to help you in that scenario?
Right.
Because in your driveway, you're totally unaware.
You keep it in the glove compartment so that whoever breaks in has a gun.
And to your point, Steve, the fact that they know this, but it's like that no one kind of seems to be doing anything.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems to me the bigger threat is just breaking your window to steal. It's usually people, most car break-ins, at least from what I understand, are opportunity break-ins. They see a bag sitting on the seat of the car and they bust the window, grab it and run. And so
have you ever had a break-in?
I have
in your car.
I've had my car broken into years ago. I had a Dodge Charger, and I was stupid. I left stuff in there. Oh, I forgot. I had another time in Chinatown when we first moved to San Francisco, 1990. And again, I was being dumb. We parked the car, and I didn't want to carry around all my camera gear. I was a photographer at the time. Oh, I'll just open the trunk and put it in there.
Yeah, just put it in the trunk.
Everybody's watching you do that. You know, that was a really, really hard lesson to learn. Lost all of my camera equipment.
The best is when you are somewhere and you have to put something valuable in your trunk or hide it somehow cleverly in your car, so you actually go through all of the steps required, and then when you open the trunk you like kind of like casually do it just in case someone's looking or what.
Well, I've seen people put signs on their windows that say there's nothing in this car, please don't break the windows.
That's just a red flag.
Yeah, it sort of is. It's like that point.
The windows down thing kind of spoke to a greater point, which was more so like the joy of driving, as in driving is something I do if I'm stressed out or if I'm overwhelmed. Going for a walk is really good, but I also really enjoy going for a drive, sometimes with music, sometimes without music. And I think that's key to having the windows down, because it kind of feels like you're actually doing it and you get to hear the engine and stuff like that. So
to that point, my worst car, the WeGo, when it was operational, which, by the way, yesterday I just bought batteries for it, so it'll be operational again soon.
Oh, cool.
But when it was operational, I really liked going out on the evenings when it was 70, 80 degrees Fahrenheit, 25 degrees Celsius, and just cruising around because it's electric. When it came to a stop, there was no noise at all, and just slow speeds, of course, but just kind of roaming around the neighborhood quietly. It was nice.
I bet you like the looks that people give you while you're driving that too.
No, that one has a big sticker on the side that says all electric and a big graphic of a plug. So the first week that I drove that, I got honked at by a Prius and then passed by several diesel trucks rolling coal at me. So that's not a good experience.
It doesn't at all show that you're trying to like brag about the fact that your car is all electric. Just show it to everyone.
I didn't put that on there. It's the irony of the situation.
So is the joy of driving for you being in a car which is moving and it is not making any sound, so therefore you're enjoying the things around the car? Or have you been traditionally, like, because you are a gearhead, are you the person who like loves getting in a car and hearing the motor go and
yes, absolutely.
Putting on driving?
I like both.
You like both?
Yeah.
Do you find it an empty feeling in an electric car?
You know, it just depends on what mood I'm in. Of course, I'm in a situation where I have any number of cars to choose from. But if I'm in a mood where I just want to go at highway speeds and listen to music, I'll pick my Polestar and just be cocooned from the outside world. But if I want nature, if I want that relaxing feeling, or it's at night, I'll either pick one of my older cars and intermix engine sounds and transmission feeling with that, or something electric and roll the windows down. It just depends on what mood I'm in.
Have you always been like this, even as a kid? Were you just like enamored by driving and where you can't, like, couldn't wait to get your license and start driving and being around cars, or no?
Pretty much. But I also grew up out in the middle of nowhere, so getting my driver's license was also, oh my God, I can go places.
Freedom. Independence.
I think more and more kids are opting out of their driver's licenses until later these days. It's just the weirdest phenomenon that a lot of my son's friends, and they were like turning, you know, 16, 17, 18. They still haven't gotten their licenses.
Is it a testament to public transportation?
I don't think so, especially where we live in Marin. You really kind of need a car. I think it's a testament to helicopter parents that take them everywhere and do everything for them.
I thought you were going to say a testament to helicopters.
Hey, have you seen these flying cars? All of a sudden, I'm seeing the flying cars showing up in my news feed.
Every 2 years. They're 2 years away.
Well, these are like actual, they look like, they're basically kind of drones, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, but they look like a car. And so you could just take, they said they're like ready for production.
No. I mean, we have a tough enough time on roads. Can you imagine people flying in the
air?
Well,
you don't do it yourself. It's all a control. It's like a Wego, a Wemo. What am I trying to say? Wemo.
Waymo.
So basically, I think you would just like a drone or something. You would type in where you want to go, and it just takes you.
Oh, good.
To
so
it.
There's not even a pilot flying it.
No, you wouldn't be driving it yourself.
I think when it's in car mode,
you.
I think the one you're talking about is XPeng, the Chinese electric car company, that's making one. And if anyone's going to bring it to market, it's going to be them. They have unbelievable production capacity.
Yeah. I don't know. It's
a capability, I should say.
It's a strange, strange thing. I mean, I have no problem getting into a self-driving car, but I don't know. Self-driving, I don't know. I would more likely get into a self-flying car than I would a flying car that I have to control.
Oh, yeah. Less obstacles.
Yeah.
Are you that person that whenever there's driving, you have to be the driver? Do you hate being a passenger?
I mean, I like being a passenger. I'm always the driver. I live alone. I'm always driving by myself.
Nobody knows how to drive your quirky cars anyway. So, well, I guess
it's always a fun challenge to get people to drive it.
Well, if somebody, do you ever let people try to drive your cars, and do you sit there going, no, first you got to do this, and then you got to hit it right here, and you got to do the.
Oh no, I'm really relaxed when I'm excited to let people drive my car, because that's why I have them, is to show them off to people.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
You should have a podcast where you take people out in your cars and they drive. Well, they try to drive your cars.
Well, I should, actually. I had one video where Technology Connections drove my Trabant.
Mm.
And I thought it was going to be hilarious. He would do like everyone else does and be too easy on the clutch, too easy on the throttle. But he was aware of that, and he just thrashed the thing everywhere. He did mild burnouts going up hills.
Chad, I got to tell you, when we were at Open Sauce, Robert and Alec, those two guys are rock stars. I mean, they can't walk anywhere without people just like swarming around them.
Did you end up getting recognized more than VidCon, Robert?
Oh, yeah. I got recognized.
Yeah, everybody knew Robert.
Maybe 24 times. It was fantastic.
He was.
What was the vibe? What was the... Tell us about the difference, because I wasn't there. You guys did that one on your own, because you're the maker folks. What happens at Open Source?
Oh, Steve, you want to take this one?
Well, I guess it's the closest thing to Maker Faire, which Make Magazine did back in the day. It's not really my vibe too much. I guess if you're really into... I mean, there's a lot of like nerd culture stuff, which I'm not really totally into, and science stuff also, which I'm not totally into. It's more, I guess, technology focused is what it is when they say maker. They're talking about people who make robots, mostly.
Yeah. My experience was incredibly biased because I was excited that it was like all of the people I watch on YouTube were there. I got to meet all of them.
Robert was geeking and, out meeting everybody.
Oh yeah, I was having a blast. I don't really have an opinion on the general public event part of it. I walked around a few times and it was interesting, but I mean, I was just in heaven on the top floor.
Yeah, we didn't spend a whole lot of time down there on that show floor area. We're all upside. We were up there hobnobbing it. You know, Robert got me in. I tell you that, Chad.
Because I was going to have to wait. Those kind of qualifications, Steve.
I was going to have to wait a 2.5 hour line. And Robert's like, "No, we got you in. We got you." Swooped me
Robert,
up.
Robert, how did that
through the
how
back
did you manage
door.
To get those hookups?
We just we walked to the entrance that Alec and I walked in and pulled Steve there, and we just pulled him in. That was it.
the YouTuber cover. I see. Yes. Yeah, I got it.
Although Alec went to William Osman and got him got Steve a creator.
Yeah.
Lanyard.
Yeah,
thing.
So I could go up to the Mucky Mucks and meet everybody. It was fun. Got to meet some people from this show.
It's just a 2-day event, right?
Yeah, 2 days. Yeah. There was a VIP party the day before on the World War II ship, the Jeremiah O'Brien. Mm-hmm. That was a really interesting surprise. We're going to have a party on an old steamship.
That's a cool ship. Did you get to see much of the ship, or did they just kind of keep you in one?
Yeah, they had the engine room active the whole time. And,
oh, nice.
Of course, a bunch of engineering types and makery types were in line to see the engine room. Mm. You got to walk around the active connecting rods going up and down. The connecting rods, the size of the building powering this ship.
Yeah, they got a number of those ships down there. I don't know if you saw some of the ones further down. They've got some of these big old sailing ships, you know, with all the masts and everything. And there's a submarine you can tour, which is super creepy. One of these also, I think, World War II era submarines. And, oh, my God, I don't know how people did that. It's like
I saw basically none of San Francisco outside of Open Source while I was there.
Did you get a chance to ride a Waymo or not? I forgot to ask you.
No, they are not public in San Francisco, I found out.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you just had to get the app and you could get them. How do you get on one then?
You have to be invited unless you're in Phoenix. Phoenix is public, but San Francisco is still invite only.
Oh, I did not know that. Oh, okay. Then I guess all these people, I see posting them on Instagram. They're just not, they're in the know.
I guess. It seems to be a lot of people that get the invite, but
yeah.
I didn't even see the Golden Gate Bridge until the flight taking off.
Oh, really? But you would just freeze to death on it. It's cold.
You sent us a picture of a car that you picked up recently. What was it? Is that a little cool red car?
It was a Polski Fiat. It's a Polish-built Fiat 126P. It's a Fiat designed it initially in Italy in the 70s, I think it was, to replace the Fiat 500. But then it was built under license in Poland until 2002. It's
wow.
A little rear engine, two-cylinder, 26 horsepower, air-cooled. It's just the essence of communistical cars.
What year is it?
Mine's a 91.
Oh, my goodness. Is there going to be a video about this?
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you have
I'm having trouble getting it titled right now, but there will be.
How's your video lineup? What's your schedule like? Do you have a million ideas? Do you have no ideas? What's going on with your YouTube channel?
I've got a million ideas, and I just feel like I don't have the time to work on any of them, but yeah, I'm doing fine. I've got way more ideas than I have time, so it's the right side of that balance.
And you get to work on at least the fun ones, or at least the ones that you have to prioritize, or also the kind of like the ones that you're interested in.
Yeah, right now I'm working on something that's kind of painful. I'm just putting in CV shafts in the electric escape project, but oh my god, anything to do with suspension and brake parts is just fighting with everything. I spent a day cutting off a bolt. I started twisting the bolt off, and I broke the head of it off. So it was just
that was the Robin, right?
No, this is the Escape. The what I'm talking about escape. Hasn't okay. Aired yet. I'm still editing the video.
Oh, I see.
And I just spent the day trying to get this bolt out from the other side. That didn't work. So I ended up just let's see. I hit it with a grinder, and then an air hammer, and then an air hammer again, and then I eventually ended up getting the control arm off with a reciprocating saw and three sets of blades.
Wow!
Did you film? Did you film it?
Yeah, but it's boring to watch that. So I just kind of supercut through the highlights.
All right, so we'll speed run to a question which I had for you, because you mentioned in your, I think it was a lawnmower video, you're like, I'm not going to do wiring on camera because wiring's boring on camera, or something to that effect. And yeah. I say nay, because arguably, you know, you'll be like, oh, here's me unscrewing screws, and you managed to make it interesting. So is it because you didn't want to go through the pain of like, hey, figuring out a creative way to do the wiring, or is like the wiring enough work already and you don't need to add to it?
You know, it's both of those things. So yes, the wiring is enough work already and I don't want to add to it. That is a big part of it. But the way I feel like I'm able to make these working segments entertaining is by clipping together noise making parts, and nothing of wiring makes noise, so there's nothing to cut together. So I haven't figured out a way to make that interesting or entertaining.
Well, perhaps there's an opportunity to create your own sound to add. You remember the guy from Epic Mealtime added the caw-caw sound instead of doing a sensor beep whenever he kind of like swore on camera or something. So perhaps you can find a stock sound of some sort and make editing. Yeah, I'm just adding to your work. I'm sorry, Robert. I'll show
I could pull a Frank Howarth and turn it all into stop motion animation and make own sound effects for everything. But oh my god.
Well, this bolt deal, it sounds like it was the same thing you were having with the Reliant Robin. And I think that was your recent video I was watching where you were trying to get the radiator out of this car, and it was just impossible to get to, but everything was like kind of fused up in there. It was looked like it was just hanging by nothing.
It was indeed hanging by nothing. And here's the secret. I don't like working on cars for that exact reason. Everything is painful. I like making my own stuff from scratch. I like working on fixing things that I broke or that I built in the first place, but taking stuff off of a car that's been on there for 30 years is always painful. It's always painful.
Yeah. Years ago when I thought, I should work on cars because it's what I should do. It didn't last very long because it was always the most frustrating experience for me. First, I would have to jack up the car, put it on blocks, crawl underneath there, which I hated doing. Everything was always way grimier than I expected it to be. And then when I found the one bolt, I could never twist it. And if I did, it would always break free and I'd bust my knuckles or something. It was never
the only thing that makes it tolerable is A, having air conditioning. I don't understand how people work in unair-conditioned or unheated shops. Mm. It just sounds nightmarish to me, and B, having a lift.
You've got that lift, yeah.
I have a question for you. How does someone who gets all of that greasy stuff that Steve was just talking about on their hands all the time off their hands? How do you care for your hands?
Gloves. Oh. I always wear rubber gloves while I'm working.
Yeah. He's like a surgeon in there working on those cars, Chad.
I can't stand working without gloves.
You are? Yeah. Okay.
I like getting my hands dirty in the proverbial sense, but not in the literal sense.
Have you noticed on YouTube any anomalies? Is your audience still... Because the remarkable thing about your audience is how much it grows. Kind of like almost every time you're on the podcast. I just quickly checked and you're just under 330,000 subscribers. Your video schedule is not in any way predictable. It seems like you put up a video when you put up a video, which is fantastic. Isn't that the secret of all secrets? Do you think it's growing because you're intentionally just worried about putting out your videos and like you don't worry about that stuff, or do you actually pay that stuff any mind?
I really don't pay that stuff any mind, because then I start to worry about it. I mean, if one video it does incredibly well, I don't want to try to repeat that, because then I'll be doing the same thing forever. And sometimes, well, a lot of the time, I can't repeat it. Like my best video, well, actually my best video of the year is a lot.
It's the latter video, yeah.
Yeah, which I could repeat with the Polsky Fiat, but I'm not going to bank on it. I'm just going to assume it'll be another 100,000 view video. It's not going to go to a million. It'll just be an ordinary one. But other things like parts of the Escape project, certain parts do better than others. It tends to wane over time, but in general, certain parts do better than others, and there's no way to repeat that. If I had one part that did really well, what can I gain from that? What can I gather from that?
What do you think people respond to the most? Just watching you struggle with things, watching you overcome things, or just seeing you kind of drive around?
Depends on what you mean by respond to. If we're talking peer review counts, or are we talking what actually responding to in the comments?
Well, in the comments, it's probably they love to see you struggling with things.
It is definitely that. I get a lot of comments telling me that they love to see me showing my mistakes, because it makes me more relatable. Yeah. It's authentic.
The top comment actually on your Lada video is from a Trabant to a Lada. You're going up in life. <It's> very true. Every way to go.
So what else you got coming up with the new car? What's the first step?
Well,
as far as revealing that to the world,
the first step is probably going to be maybe not the final step, but with cars like this that I buy, this thing is in perfect shape.
Is that the same as like the Fiat that you see now, the new Fiat, those little bitty
Fiats? Same company. Well,
but I mean, it's kind of the same car. I mean, obviously it's not the same car, but it looks like the same size and it's this little tiny thing.
Same segment, but drastically, dramatically different cars.
I guess so. What do they call that one now? The Fiat 300 or something?
It's the 500, because they went for the 500. Retro styling.
So it's intentionally like retro. I see. Okay.
Although I was looking on Fiat's website yesterday, because this is apparently what I do in my spare time, and Fiat has a new model called the Topolino, which was the name of one of their original small city cars. And it's Europe only. It's like, I think it's 8 horsepower, maybe 12 horsepower, electric, tiny. The body is made of plastic. It is all, I guess, injection molded out of one piece. It's like my dream car as far as cars that I can't get here in the United States.
So you've got the new old Fiat. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing you need to do with it at all.
Right. So the joy of this one is just going to be after I finally get it titled, which is probably going to take a month because the government complaining. But after I get it titled, I can just drive it around and just gather my thoughts on it for a couple weeks, a month, and then I'll sit down for 2 to 4 days to write a script, and I'll just make a production of it. And with the Lada, that was the last video I made with that car, and then I'm going to sell it. I don't think that'll be the case with this Fiat, because I like it a lot more than the Lada. But it's just, I can make a production out of it. I don't have to spend time working on it. It's nice.
How much does a car like that cost, if you don't mind me asking?
I paid $9,500 for it.
So I don't know if that's...
I mean, it sounds like a lot, because you're saying it's in classic, really, really, really good shape.
Yeah, so that's like classic vehicle pricing, right?
You know, it's worth $9,500 to me.
Got it.
I will undoubtedly have, if I say that number publicly, I will undoubtedly have people who grew up in Eastern Europe telling me the car is worth $100, maybe. I paid way too much for it, but whatever. Car's worth what you pay for it.
What is your dream car? Like, what is the car that is like your North Star?
Well, I can tell you that a North Star engined car is not my North Star.
Oh, okay.
I don't really know. I used to say Caterham anytime anyone asked me that question. But I don't. Are we talking money is no object?
Money is no object. So if you want a McLaren or if you want a cool exotic.
I'd love to have a Remontz. I'd love to play around with a Remots or a Rimac. It's an electric supercar, I guess you'd call it, out of Croatia. And the company's history is also really interesting. They started with this concept of this it's electric supercar that they wanted to build. And they got some angel investor in Dubai that wanted to fund their company with with the caveat that they moved their operations from Croatia to Dubai. But they wanted to stay in Croatia so they could be the only Croatian car company and so they could make their country proud.
Wow.
So, but they didn't have any funding if they stayed in Croatia. So they made it work by becoming a parts manufacturer, a parts supplier for all kinds of other different car companies. They did like window switches and injection molded parts and all of this stuff in a car that you don't think about. They started that to make money so that they could build this car eventually. And the second generation of the Rimac, it's called the Nevera, which is apparently a rainstorm in Croatia. It's 1,900 horsepower. It has an electric motor on each wheel. It has dials on the inside so you can bias the torque front and rear any way you want to. So you could have an 800 horsepower front wheel drive car if you so desired. It can charge at 500 kilowatts. It has a 120 kilowatt hour battery. It's got like 400 miles of range. It is just the pinnacle of electric cars.
And it's gorgeous. It's really, yes, I pulled up, and if anybody's listening to this, hopefully they did pull it up, because that, what a gorgeous vehicle.
Gorgeous and mind-blowing. I, obviously, I'm more drawn to the engineering side of things. It's always fun to hear other opinions about cars that I'm interested in. Like the Lucid is one that I'm super drawn to because of the engineering behind it, and then hearing...
The backstory is way more important than any kind of performance metric for you, for a car.
Pretty much. I mean, the performance metric is also really interesting because there's things like McMurtry Sperling. Can't remember the actual model name of the car, but it's a car that does 0 to 60 in 1.4 seconds.
That would push
and that's interesting.
Your eyeballs would just push into the back of your head.
Right.
Why do you need that?
You don't.
What are you going to do with that?
It's a side effect of the engineering of the car.
I mean,
because this is a car with a fan that sucks the car down to the ground. That's how it's able to go that fast.
Remember the other day, Steve, when you were like, how could I get 800 horsepower and the front wheels with my torque? Remember where you were saying that? Well, this is how you can do it,
yeah,
man.
Of course.
You need a 90. How much is one of these Rimac Neveras? Like $3
million?
$2 million
there or
you
something.
Go. Okay, so it's that new supercar price of like just ridiculous.
But isn't it funny how it used to be like you would think of fast cars and they would be like the muscle cars, you know, in the 60s. And you compare that to today's cars.
Yeah.
It's no comparison.
A hybrid Camry is faster than a 69 Mustang Boss 429.
Yeah.
I remember when electric cars kind of first started coming in, all those people rolling in their 911s and then, I got a thing, and just getting buried by Tesla, like a Tesla with a 5-year-old in the back. So.
The fastest car I had was a Dodge Charger, and but even that, it was like 0 to 60, and it wasn't that fast, even though it was kind of made for drag racing. I mean, compared to what we've got today,
I'd be willing to bet your Ram is actually faster in a straight line than that Charger was.
Probably.
You know what? It was back in the days. Right. It was back in the days where the more sound, the faster it goes. Even if it went by slowly, if it went by loudly, it was like, look at that car go. My goodness.
That's what makes a slow electric car feel especially slow.
Yes.
Well, you know, I had a friend. Here's an old car for you. I don't know if you've heard of. Well, of course you have. You've heard of everything. So this is a test. A Buick GTX.
Oh, yeah.
You familiar with? Oh, really? Okay. Because he always had this car, and people always would say, what do you have, a GT? And he would say a GTX, and they said, what, you mean a GTO? And he was like, no, it's a GTX. It's a Buick. Mm-hmm. He called it a muscle car, but I don't know if it really was, because it was just kind of a, to me, it looked like an old people car, but it was kind of beat up, I guess.
Well, every car from the 60s and 70s now looks like an old person car.
They're just boats.
Yeah.
That suspension, the whole car just kind of wobbles from side to side.
Everything was square. It was literally.
But yeah,
like
I remember that GTX, and it had Buick had these like kind of cool swooping sides to them that was kind of identifiable.
What was the car for the Dukes of Hazzard? Challenger.
That was the Charger. That was the same one I had, the 69 Charger. Okay, but I didn't have the
69 Charger.
Yeah. You didn't have the Southern Confederate flag on the top.
No, I had the. Yeah, I didn't have the Confederate flag on mine, but I had the Bumblebee stripe on the back, the RT.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, okay.
It was a cool car. I loved it. It was huge. It was just a big car. The back seat. Here's an interesting thing. There was air conditioning that ran to the back seats. That car didn't work, but
really?
that was my experience with owning a car that needed to be owned by a mechanic. That was a big problem because I could not really keep up with all of the repairs that thing needed because it had been driven hard since the day it came off of the assembly line, and I bought it in like 84, and so it had already been 15 years almost.
Well, I mean, that was back in the days when a warranty was like a year.
That's right. Steve, is it fair to say that one of those cars from your childhood would probably be your dream car if you were to have like money's no option? You don't seem to be the type that would run out and get a flashy, you know, Lamborghini or something like that. What would you get if you could get anything?
I don't know. I just, I don't really
know. Steve an F-150 Lightning.
I don't know.
Hummer?
No, that's too big. I don't want to drive. Everybody would spit at my car around here if I drove a Hummer around here.
So
would
you just Hummer EV?
Well, see, there's the conundrum. People are like, I'm going to throw a rock. Well, wait a second, it's an EV, but it's still a Hummer. I don't know. I know that my next car will be an electric car. There's no doubt about that. But I'm not sure what I would get. I do like the Teslas. I would have no problem buying a Tesla.
Either you could have a dream car or you could pull a car back from the past. A car that you had to get rid of and you could bring it back.
I would, the Charger was fun. I did like the Charger and it was in really good condition body-wise. You know, it was just mechanically it suffered some problems. But you know, one of the first cars I owned, this is really bad, is I was 16 and I bought a van. And so it was like a cargo van it was like a hippie van, you know, it had like these stripes down the sides of it. It was red. And then so inside it had like a table that dropped down into a bed. And so I tricked out the inside I put carpeting on the walls.
Carpeting.
Well, I made like this little beer container. This is so dumb, but like this little box in there where you could store things, and it was a seat, so I put like this padded seat on it so you could sit on it, and so you know you'd
have
to open it up.
That 70s show feel like a documentary.
That's what it felt like. So yeah, this would have been in like 1982, and I remember having friends in it. We'd go out and they would sit at the table in the back and we were drinking beer. Don't ask, don't judge, don't cancel me. And every time I would hit the brakes, you know, inevitably somebody's beer would go sliding off of that table towards the front of the van. And so it was just always smelled like beer in this thing.
I remember those vans because they like personified the early 80s.
Yeah.
And the A-Team had the big kind of red stripe through theirs and whatnot. But I remember all of the carpeting on the inside and that little table that you're talking about on the inside on some of them had little drink holders anyway. So of course you're going to have a cocktail.
That van helped me get a job because I was working at a movie theater and they needed somebody to do maintenance work for the whole chain of theaters. And so the manager of the theater I was working at, he kind of recommended me. And then the guy who would have been my boss was like, do you got a truck or something? I'm like, I got a van. He's like, okay, good enough.
Let's
you
go.
You got some tools, you got a van, let's go. And so then
you
it
put
was
put sag carpeting on your resume.
I know.
Would you consider a van, Robert? Are you a van
guy? Absolutely.
Yeah. Would you consider a project where you would trick it out and carpet the inside and make it?
See, it's all come back. Hashtag van life.
Yeah, it would be more utilitarian for me. I would just like a place to sleep when I'm going places.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I have the school bus project, and eventually, I am going to trick out the inside with nice amenities and have a full bathroom and bedroom and everything.
Well, that's a whole entire school bus. You also don't seem like a motorcycle guy. Yeah, no. Motorcycle ride the open, and that might explain the windows down thing. Because you'd hate a motorcycle. Steve, you're not a motorcycle.
I kind of like motorcycling. I've just never been into it. I don't know why.
I have never ridden a motorcycle in my life. I don't know how.
I have ridden on the back of a motorcycle once when I was like 10.
Yeah.
Really, same, that was same it. With me. And it was the same thing where it's just like, I get how some people looked at it. It's like, that's their gig. And they wear the uniform and they kind of like do the whole weekend biker thing. But I, you know what? I really just thought about just falling off and hurting myself. And that, right?
When you're riding a motorcycle, at least in Missouri, can you split the lanes? Is that legal?
No. But you can ride without a helmet.
Oh, okay. So in California, you can split the lanes, and it's always been legal to, if there's traffic, you can ride right between, right on that dotted line or wherever you are. And it always is a little like, it makes me jump a little bit when somebody comes up alongside of me. But usually they, you know, especially if it's like a Harley or something, they like kind of give you notice with a extra loud. But it always, you know what, I think what bothers me the most is it's like, it feels like they're cutting in line. Especially if there's a lot of traffic. You're like, I have to wait here and you're just going right through there.
So you don't like motorcycles because you're jealous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know
maybe.
Why that
and
is
I
still
would
legal.
Get I would be the one at fault if I were to hit the person. So that's the issue. Yeah. If you're driving the car, the person in the motorcycle gets to cut in between lanes, and you're right, Steve. Like it is the most like when someone like sails past you and you're like stuck in traffic, it's alarming. And I think of the wee 70-year-old ladies who are, you know, close to the end of their days and just getting startled and it causing issues. And I have no idea why a place like California would actually allow it. Mind you, I guess I do, because you arguably have the worst traffic in the world. Is that still true to this day? Does LA and like California
probably. Yeah,
is it a nightmare to drive on the freeway in San Francisco as well, or is that just exclusive to
LA? There's not a lot of freeways in San Francisco, but they're around and throughout the Bay Area, yeah. There is definitely times when you want to avoid it. If you can drive on a freeway between, say, 11 and 2, you're okay most places, but there's still going to be slowdowns. But, man, once that rush hour starts to kick in around 3 or so, or in the morning, you know, it's just like, ugh. But they've got a lot of the Lexus lanes now, you know, so if you want to pay to ride in the carpool lanes, you can.
Did you call it the Lexus lane?
Yeah, that's what they call them, because it's like, oh, well, if you're rich, you could just go through the fast lane.
There you go, Chad.
I know, but doesn't everybody drive a Lexus these days? Like, is Lexus still that, like, benchmark of, like, it's
well,
that's
an
Lexus
old term,
lane.
The Lexus lane, that's, so maybe today it would be something different.
Do you listen to podcasts, Robert?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This one, for one.
Ah, there you go. Perfect. Can you give us a 30-second commercial for this podcast? No. I was wondering if when you listen to podcasts, have you ever listened to podcasts faster than they should be?
No, and I hate it. I actually had, I was listening to the Making It podcast, Jimmy, Bob, and David. I was going to rattle off their names real quick, and I forgot David's name. Anyway, and the podcast player I was listening to, it on its own turned the speed up to 1.2 times. Couldn't figure out how to turn the speed back down to normal, and it drove me completely insane listening to that episode. I listen to things at the speed they're supposed to be listened at, and in my videos when I'm editing, I never do sped up, or I should say I rarely do sped up time lapses of anything. I just like time to be the way it is.
Yeah. Stop messing with time. Playing God.
Steve, do you ever speed up or slow down the...
Depends. The purpose that I'm listening to something. But podcasts, I never speed up because I'm always just kind of listening to them and I enjoy people talking. Mostly I listen to like My Brother and Me and comedy podcasts, those sort of things. But YouTube, once in a while, I do speed those up if it's something that I'm just trying to like get through a bunch of information and I want to learn something fast, or if I'm prepping for even a podcast or something and I just need to watch a number of somebody's videos, I'll do that. But mostly I'm kind of, I just watch it regular speed.
So apparently if you do it too much, it starts messing with your ability to have regular conversations and listen to content at a regular pace, because everything seems so much slower because you're slowly training your brain to, you know, think quicker and quicker and quicker. And it's interesting that you say you do it on YouTube videos, because I did it briefly and I did it for YouTube videos. And I realized the reason why I was doing is it was to speed run through all of the calls to action and all of the stuff that they traditionally told us to put in a YouTube video that we're now are trying to like get over to get to like the good meat of it. And it just it was just something I was thinking about recently, simply because like longer form content and like content which is more in line with the traditional stuff that we saw on YouTube like up to a few years ago has now like everything's sped up, everything's shortened, the context is taken out of everything, and it's an excuse to not an excuse excuse me it's sorry, I completely lost my train of thought there.
you know why? It's because your brain was all speeding up.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was, actually.
It was you can talk.
And that's why I listen on half speed.
That is funny that they do offer a half speed option, too.
Have you ever heard Dolly Parton's Jolene in, I think it's third speed or two-thirds speed?
Oh, no.
It is so much better than the original.
Really? So I've been working on my website. So I am transferring over my woodworking for meremortals.com. I'm finally forwarding it to my new shop, wwmm.com, and it's not working, the forwarding. I don't know why.
How has the experience been now that you've had some more time to like take in analytics for offering plans at like what people are willing to pay for them?
I don't know. I haven't really gotten into analytics on the site itself yet. I'm just kind of like seeing how the sales are going and adding new plans. That's kind of my, and I'm constantly changing the site, kind of the look of the site around until I kind of get something that I like. But I think it's just, it is still really interesting to observe how people are paying for plans and how I've had a few comments, people griping about now charging for plans, which is kind of weird. It just seems really entitled. Like, what? Now you're charging for plans? And plus the fact that they're
for free.
I know. And the plus, because the new plans I'm selling for $27. And I think that's a fair price for the amount of effort and how extensive they are. So these are new projects. And plus, I think at that price point, it kind of makes people want to actually do it. So it's like serious people will buy those rather than just a $5 plan they might just never do anything with. But I had a few comments from people that are like, you know, if you charged half of that, you'd get double the amount of people. And we've talked about this before. And I'm always like,
the marketing directors and the comments.
It's not the way it works. Otherwise, everything would cost a dollar.
Aren't all of these people also seeing that you can choose how much you pay?
On those, see, I have like premium plans. I only have two of them so far, where it is $27. Oh, okay. But then, yeah, I offer all the others are choose whatever you want. And so it's $0 through $20. There's options to pick.
And you have the two plans, which are premium. Those are each $27.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like you assign more value to them simply through the pricing.
Yeah.
How did you arrive at that price? Was there a calculation that went into it, or was it
I looked at what other people were charging for the most part, and I wanted to charge more because I think people are undercharging. And when people complain that if I'm charging too much, the problem isn't me charging too much. It's that most people are underselling themselves. I think that they really need to start upping their game. I think this is a big problem YouTubers have in general, is they're kind of getting walked on in a lot of ways, either from sponsors or whatever, not charging what they're worth, their value.
I give away a lot for free. I have people that are surprised. They'll say, hey, I didn't get the, because I have just one set of plans that are for sale, and I'll get people that say, hey, I didn't get the link or whatever, or someone will just ask me, hey, I don't have money. I want to support your thing. Do you have another resource? Or they'll ask me a question that's basically give me this free set of plans. And when I do, they're always shocked.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, for 15 years, I've given away free plans. And I just think now, especially because all I got to do is look at how my project videos perform now, and they're just so much worse than if I were to just start selling top 10 tools and things like that. Those kind of videos will do much better. So there's got to be a way of offsetting that. And it used to be, I would think, well, I can give away free plans because the video itself is going to do really good, and I'm going to make, you know, enough money off of the AdSense or whatever. And that's not the case anymore. And so I think, well, then if you want the plans, you got to pay for them. And I'm going to make it a price that means that you're serious, because you're not going to make any money selling plans for $5. It just takes too many people, and that you're not going to get that many people.
Yeah. I sold mine for $8 and it was fun, but it's not.
Yeah. I mean, here, I got a check for $100, you know, after a month or something.
It goes back to that value statement that you were talking about. Can I ask why you didn't choose 25, 29, or 30? Or was it because it wasn't 25, 29?
No, you know why it is? It's because my courses all end in a 7. And this goes back to something that they'd researched, Till researched this a while back. And for some, I don't know if this is true or not, but he came across this thing where things ending in 7 usually perform slightly better.
I remember Till telling me that. Yes, no. And it is true. I mean, there's different, I think Walmart uses like 88s and like, as opposed to 99s, and there's a bunch of psychology.
I don't know how much any of that psychology is true or not, and if it is, it's probably so slight that it's not really, maybe on a huge scale it might make a difference, but I think on a small potatoes like me, it probably doesn't influence a sale any.
Well, you're getting a Christian audience, I guess. Go for 7s.
That's true. If anybody is listening and looking for some solid plans, well worth $27, if not $29 or $30.
Do you know, that gives me an idea. This Halloween, I should make a sale. All of my plans are $6.66.
Oh, that's a great deal. Even the premium ones. Oh, man.
That would have to be
Are upmarket and sell printed versions of your plans on sheets of wood.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, so I just got finished writing this month's newsletter, which I love doing, but it takes me like 2 days plus to write it. It's always on the weekend. We try to get it together on Monday, so it'll go out on Friday. But I start writing this intro note, and then it just kind of evolves and it becomes something else, because I never know what I'm going to write about. But I'm usually pretty happy after I've spent hours and hours working on this thing. But I decided to talk about some of these. I have a few of these old woodworking magazines and books from the 1970s. And so I thought it would just be fun to kind of look at those. And it's really interesting looking at the woodworking plans that are in those books, because in a lot of cases, you'd have like a couple of pages describing how this like bookcase was built or something. And then the plans would be like a half page of just like an exploded view with all these tiny little, like, wow, this is like, there's no way anybody would be able to figure this stuff out. It's crazy what they did back then. And it was pre-table saw days. I mean, some people had table saws, but most people didn't.
I guess most people use radial arm saws.
Radial arm saw would have been a more common. Yeah. And there was still a lot of hand saw users. There was like the little bits in there. Proper ways to use a hand saw. The difference between a hand saw and a rip saw or crosscut saw.
I submit that would make a really interesting video. Unless, of course, it's been done before.
But
it's
like, do
Jason from Fireball Tool did a series. I think he was taking projects from Popular Mechanics.
Yes.
Those were more metalworking machining related, but they were really interesting.
They were rough. I mean, it wasn't like what we consider plans today, you know, more step-by-step things. They were like, here's like
exploded drawing.
All you get, hand-drawn, you know. They didn't even have CAD software or anything.
You should try to build a project from one of these.
Well, you know, and I guess that's sort of the point I was making in this, is that they're fun and they're funny. The photos are hilarious. All these guys in bell bottom pants and, you know, and stuff. But if you look at some of the projects, some of them are actually kind of interesting and will kind of, you could certainly take some of those ideas and bring them into something that you're making today.
They had like clever storage ideas and stuff like
that. Storage ideas. Looking at, you're right.
I picked up a lot of magazines, just like collecting old magazines, and my dad left me some old Popular Mechanics, like Around the Home books, and it was like 20 of them, and they were all the either black and white photos or like illustrations of the guy with the pipe in his mouth.
Always with the pipe.
Making a birdhouse. And then they would show how to make the birdhouse. And to your point, it wasn't like step one, do this. No. Step two, do this. It was like, here it is. And here's all the parts kind of floating around. And then you just put it all together. But I think that would be fascinating to go through and like make a headboard that has built-in nightside tables, because that was the kind of stuff that they had back then, like clever storage idea for your closet.
It was
even back in the day.
Storage stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm. The other idea I had, and this was goes back a couple of years, and I downloaded a bunch of stock photos, and I thought it would make for a funny video, but I never did get around to doing it. One of these days I might. Maybe I'll just release like individuals as stories on Instagram or something, but I've downloaded stock photos. When you go to any of the stock photo sites and just type in woodworking or tools or something, and to see like these, their idea of what woodworking is and how bad these photos are. I mean, you could clearly tell that whoever took the photo, staged the photo, the actor, all the, nobody knew like even how to hold a saw. There's literally one where the saw is upside down. I'm nice. Like, oh my God, this is so crazy. But they're really fun to look at. Goofy. Totally goofy. You can tell
Steve,
these people.
You have to do this. You have to do that idea. That's a really, really funny idea.
Yeah, that's what I need. Less views on my videos.
Well, I think potentially. You could also do terrible.
I'd do it on my second channel.
What's the next viral video for Aging Wheels?
Going to 3,000 miles in the Trabant. I don't know.
Come on, that's a great title. Going 3,000 miles.
It's gonna be something with the Fiat, but how do you make that just because it's an interesting car? That's what it would be, because that's not something you're gonna get a lot of videos out of.
No, I'm probably gonna get
just the one,
and it'll appear in subsequent videos as just like a side mention.
Yeah,
I don't know. I try to put a lot of effort into the one video, and with the Lada that worked really well. But yeah, I don't know if it'll continue to work. There's one guy in the UK who has one of these cars, and he bought it and made just one video about it, and he got 1 million views in a week.
Wow. Huh.
So that's in the back of my mind, and I don't think I'm going to hit that, but it would be nice.
But I think it's cool that you can have those kind of videos, and then you kind of have like your ongoing storylines, you know, your story arc through your channel of the various cars, and just kind of we get to catch up on those and see how they're coming along and pester you for getting more work done on the bus and these sort of things.
It's like the cars are the characters on your channel.
Yeah.
It's very true.
Yeah.
And like when you get rid of one, you'll have people be like, no, I love that character. Don't
kill him.
Don't sell the Trabant.
Robert, it is always good catching up with you. I'm glad you could join us. We'll do this more often.